have so many books, sometimes you hear him say, he would be speaking with somebody and he said, yes, we have 84 books. And I would say, how many? And he said, 84. 84 books. He was very proud that, because it was Krishna's mercy, how could a man at the age of 70, traveling around the world with heart attacks and no money, how could he produce 84 volumes of books? It's something extraordinary. Even the Encyclopedia Britannica, they put one entry there and they said, Bhaktivedanta Swami astounded the literary world by producing over 70 books in a span of 11 years. No one, it's scarcely believable. So he wanted that these books would be the basis of our education. Actually, he even said that he put everything in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, everything required. The idea was he didn't know if he would survive or if he would be able to print more books, so he put everything in those three volumes that he took to America. But then he did survive and he gave so much more. So it is out of great respect for our founder Acharya that we study his books. Of course, they're not his books exclusively. They're Krishna's books. They're Bhagavad Gita spoken by Krishna. The Krishna book is written by Vyasadeva. It's all about Krishna's pastimes. So, first thing is, Vedic College ideally should have at its basis Srila Prabhupada's books. And he wanted, he even outlined how the degrees and the titles, okay, the titles, when we refer to them, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, Bhakti Sarvabhauma. These four titles, Vaishnava titles, he wanted to be given to devotees who had become learned in the books. Why? Why did he do that? Because, one, it would serve as an impetus for the devotees to study the books, and two, it would serve as an insurance that the devotees who were given positions within the society, such as Brahman or Sannyasi, that they were actually qualified. He wanted that devotees who were interested in getting Brahminical initiation, that they should pass, for example, Bhakti Shastra, Bhakti Vaibhava, Sannyasi should pass the exam, to show that they actually had a good grasp of the philosophy. And it's an inspiration to the spiritual master when he sees the students are progressing. It's a way of examining to see how one is learned. It's like in a learning experience, the teacher speaks, but then he wants to check and see if the students have understood. So these examinations, Bhakti Shastri, actually he instituted Bhakti Shastri exam in the last Mayapur festival before he departed from this world. I was here in 1977 and we sat in this building on the veranda and we wrote the exam. Prabhupada had made up the questions and so many devotees took the exam and then we got our certificates if we passed. I may say that the test was quite simple. It was not very complex. And besides that, Prabhupada gave a very lenient grading scale. Did you hear about that? He said, I guess in India they have a way of grading where they give 1,000 points score, because if you get full, it's 1,000 points. So he said, so out of 1,000 points, if a student gets 300, he passes. Is that standard?
Yeah, 35%.
30. Yeah, this is a bit humorous to us, because at least in America, the passing grade minimum is 60%. That's considered low. You're barely passing if you get 60%. So Prabhupada said 30%, so we were a bit surprised at how lenient it was for passing. But I think this is important to note, how Prabhupada was encouraging. He wanted the students to pass. He wanted them to be encouraged. He wasn't interested in making it difficult for them. He knew that just by following the process of devotional service, they'll get all knowledge, they'll get all realization. So these exams were not, shall we say, they were not the ultimate, the be-all and end-all of devotional service. Not by any means. The fact that the exam only began the last year that Prabhupada was here, it gives some indication. Now, that doesn't mean they're not important, but it means they're not of superior importance. Because just by hearing Shundata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridayam Taksto Hivabdrani Vidunoti Sunitsita, just by hearing the Bhagavatam regularly, all the inauspicious things in the heart are cleansed. So it's not required. Prabhupada even told the story about one man who used to attend the classes of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's speaking was very high. His learning was extraordinary. You've seen his English writing. His English writing is difficult for most English speakers to even understand what to speak of. His native language of Bengali was very high. So this one man used to attend the classes and he never spoke anything. And then afterwards, at one point, Prabhupada spoke with him after the class to ask him what he, to see how much he appreciated the class. It turned out the man didn't even speak the language that Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking in. But he was attending every day just to hear the vibration. He couldn't understand a word. So that's a fact. Just by hearing the vibration coming from the Vaishnavas, the pure devotees, has enough potency, full potency, to give transcendental knowledge. Examinations are not required. But because Srila Prabhupada wanted to encourage devotees to study the books, and to give credibility to our society, he was always concerned that our society should be respected. And he felt that it was important that our students should be well-learned, should be learned, so they could speak nicely. In other words, a Vaishnava, he's not interested in arguing, but if someone presents some incorrect philosophy, it should be corrected. And so the devotee will be able to defeat all the opposing arguments. It's like there are some, when you're preaching, you'll find the Karmis have some philosophy, and the Mayavadis have some philosophy, the Voidists have some philosophy. Everyone's got some different philosophy. And the scientists have some philosophy. So a devotee should be able to defeat all the philosophers, and therefore reading the books. As far as reading other Vaishnava literature, I was having a discussion with a devotee the other day about this, and he was thinking that our students in our colleges should be studying the commentaries of the other acharyas, such as Srimad Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And I was disagreeing, that not disagreeing ultimately, because I think that there may be some of our really qualified devotees and scholars at some point, after having thoroughly, you could say, mastered Srila Prabhupada's books, then as further study or research or even writing projects, that they may go through the Sanskrit work, because the works of the commentators are all in Sanskrit, so one has to become not only literate in Sanskrit, but to understand their words and the subtleties. It's not very easy. In fact, I would go so far as to say, in most cases, for a devotee to try to study the commentaries would be more confusing and detrimental than to just read Prabhupada's books. Because after all, will you know Sanskrit as well as Prabhupada? No, you won't. And how will you be able to, what do you need it for anyway? Because Prabhupada took, he read through all the commentaries. I think there's 11, that book we had. Prabhupada used a book, the Bhagavatam, which had 11 commentaries by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami, Samatha, and all the different commentators. So he went through all the commentaries, and he picked out what he considered to be the most essential points, and he included those in his purports. And then he also explained them in his purports. So in other words, he picked the most essential, then he explained further to elaborate for us. And we can see how Prabhupada was, how much he was in tune with the mentality of the people. How he knew how to present that thousands of people could become devotees just by his presentation. Before that, where do you see a movement like this? Yes, there's Ramakrishna Mission or something, but it's not even pure devotional service in India. So a young person might go and become a brahmacharya, but it's not pure Vaishnavism. So therefore, I would argue, and not only argue, I have direct instruction from Prabhupada, as I mentioned before, that our students should not go beyond the jurisdiction of his books. So that doesn't mean that you're unfortunate, that you're limited, and that you won't be able to get. Actually, as you read Prabhupada's books, you'll find so much. It's like a complete treasure house of transcendental knowledge. He was not a miser. He was so liberal. He gave so much. He gave commentaries from different acharyas because he didn't have any envy. He wasn't thinking, I won't quote anyone else. Or... Now, if there are any questions as we go along, kindly raise your hand and we can discuss if you have anything.
This postage, we are studying the Supremus.
Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vedanta. Yeah. So Bhakti Shastri, he said, would include the Bhagavad Gita, the Nectar of Devotion, Isha Upanishad, Nectar of Instruction, and the small books. So if one could pass the exam on that, he'd be called Bhakti Shastri. He'd get that title. Actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur also used to give titles. Many titles. He really loved to give titles. He would sometimes give individual titles to the student who had become learned or shown some ability. Now, also Prabhupada wanted that corresponding to these bhakti titles, that there be the degrees that were recognized by the Western world, such as bachelor's degree. So, actually, he called Bhakti Shastri the entrance exam. He said that will be the entrance exam. So in the West, they have another degree, a certificate, which is like the entrance exam. It's called associate's degree. So we compare, at our college, we give those who pass Bhakti Shastri, they get also an associate's degree, which is like a 2-year degree. So it takes 2 years. Then, the next one is Bhakti Vaibhava, and that includes everything from the Bhakti Shastri plus the first 6 cantos of Bhagavatam. And if he passes that exam, then he's called Bhakti Vaibhava, and we give the degree, bachelor's degree. Prabhupada said they should correspond to bachelor's degree. Bachelor's of Vaishnava philosophy. Then the next division is the second 6 cantos of Bhagavatam. And if one passes that, he gets the title Bhaktivedanta. Prabhupada is so humble. We would think that he would make Bhaktivedanta the top, right? The highest. Obviously, you would think that, because who could be more learned than Bhaktivedanta Swami? But no. He said that's the third one. And then there's something even higher, Bhakti Sarvabhauma. It includes all the former plus the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita, 18 volumes. And if one passes that, then he's known as Bhakti Sarvabhauma, and he gets a doctorate. So Bhaktivedanta corresponds to master's degree of Vaishnava philosophy, and Bhakti Sarvabhauma corresponds to... you know, it's so easy to set up a Vedic college because we already have all the textbooks. Prabhupada already gave us the book, and he gave us how to study them. So we don't have to, you know, become very concerned or worried. How am I going to set up a Vedic? How will we establish our Vedic clubs? It's very easy. Prabhupada gave the books, and he said how to organize the degrees and the titles. It's like within our society, devotees are very interested to get Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, right? Devotees like to get these two titles. But outside our society, if you go and you say to someone, yes, I have Bhakti Vaibhava, they say, what? What's that? But if you say, I have a bachelor's degree in Vaishnava philosophy, oh, then they can recognize. So that's why Prabhupada wanted both, for inside the society and outside. It would have effect. Well, it's a different approach. We're at our particular college. We're concerned with not just the academic learning, but we're interested in the following, with the sadhana, because actually the sadhana is even more important, really. The learning the lifestyle, because if one has, let's say he's got a good brain or something, he can go through the books and understand. But he doesn't have good sadhana, then he'll lose all of his learning anyway in due course. And then we've seen that happen to some very learned persons. I mean, we've had persons in our society who are extremely learned, I mean, brilliant. But somehow or other, due to some trick of Maya, they gave up their practices, and of course their knowledge lost. They lost that too, at least temporarily. They'll get it back again when they resume their devotional service. Another thing is that Prabhupada set the Bhakti Shastri as the requirement for getting brahminical initiation. So if you consider, in our society, to get first initiation takes 1 year. And to get brahminical initiation takes another year. That's the minimum requirement. So a minimum of 2 years. So that's why we also set it at 2 years. I personally am not very much inclined to give the title Bhakti Shastri to someone unless he's initiated. First, at least first initiated. Because I consider, I mean, having studied Prabhupada's words on these topics, that he expected that devotees should get initiated. That's just part, as we discussed before, it's part of the educational process. And even Upaniti, the act of getting diksha or the mantra, it's called Upaniti. So the spiritual master brings the disciple closer for more confidential teachings, more learning. So I think that the devotees should make a commitment, should show that they've actually understood the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Because what is your understanding of Bhagavad Gita if you don't think that it's required to take initiation? And there are some people who are devotees, but they don't understand the importance of initiation. So it means they haven't really understood Bhagavad Gita. Tadvidhi pranipati, so, but of course, there may be different views on this, and there are many institutes, as you know, developing in ISKCON, and there will be more institutes, more colleges, because now it seems that it is understood that this is what Prabhupada wanted, and it's a very good method of training our own students and attracting more students, and also giving our senior members an opportunity for more teaching for the Brahmins. If you have many institutes and many colleges, then it means you'll have many teachers, and many Brahmins will have services in that regard.
If somebody has already been a devotee, say, for a few years, and they've already taken Brahmin initiation, then do you have some kind of fast track program, or do they still have to do
that? Yeah, in our college we do. We give them the opportunity to take the Bhakti Shastra exam immediately upon enrolling in our college. And if they pass, then they're immediately Bhakti Shastra and they immediately get the associate's degree. So they save 2 years. In fact, we even do that further up. Because, as you said, there are some devotees who have been in the movement for 30 years or more. And they've really been studying the books, teaching the books for many years in the material world. Had they been in their particular field, they would have already been PhDs, they would have been professors, and they would have been probably chairman of the department in their particular university. But in our society, because we didn't have these things set up, they have no recognition. So yes, we give them the opportunity to take the Bhakti Vaibhava also, and we've had that. Some devotees, they come in and they, even without studying, they've already studied the first six cantos. They know it quite well, so they can pass the Bhakti Vaibhava exam. The only thing that we add to the six cantos for our bachelor's degree is 3 semesters of Sanskrit, which they usually like to take anyway. Just to be comparable, as we mentioned in our last session, our curriculum has been examined by a PhD from Harvard, and he said that it's comparable to Harvard and Yale's divinity courses, divinity programs. The only thing he said was lacking, when he checked it, it was a few years before, he said the only thing that was lacking was the language requirement, so we added more stress on some Sanskrit. And now it should be comparable. So, those who get degrees from our Vedic college, they will know that this is something that they have learned what is comparable to learning in the finest American divinity schools, you know, universities. Much more than that, of course, they've learned the pure Vedic teachings, the pure Bhaktivedanta knowledge. And because at our college it's a living, it's a residence college, they will have been practicing all the devotional sadhana which goes along with it. So they'll have a wonderful basis for their lives. After all, what is life for? Tato Brahma Jigyasa. It's to understand the absolute truth. And so what is the use if someone He works very hard in the material world to get his education and to get his job, and he's a good family man. But he didn't achieve the transcendental knowledge. He didn't come to the conclusion of that he's a servant of Krishna, and he wasn't qualified to, like Narottam Das Tasu Thakur sings Radha Krishna. Hari Hari Bifale Janama Goyang Manusha Janama Paya Radha Krishna Nabhajiya. I wasted my life, I didn't worship Radha and Krishna. So what? The whole thing is lost. So, yes, these Vedic College is meant to give people the highest knowledge and to let them perfect their life. And sometimes people ask, well, what happens if someone goes to your college? How will this prepare him to earn a living in the material world? So I always answer, I say, well, according to one's karma, he's going to get a certain amount of money anyway. That's already set. You can't change it. You can't get more or less. That's our philosophy, isn't it? According to one's previous activity, his punya, he gets a particular body. Karanam Guna Sangho Sat, Sada Sanjami Jadashu. He gets a body, and in that body it's already predetermined how much wealth he will get, how much education he will get, how much sense gratification, how long he'll live. Sometimes it's said it's written in the hand, it's also written on the forehead. Those who know, they can read someone's forehead, the lines. And it's also written, the astrologers, they do the chart based on the time of birth. They can tell you, yes, this person's going to have this much wealth, he's going to be this, that. This is a science. So if it's true that I'm already destined, I give the example, it's like a trust fund. You know what a trust fund is? It's like, let's say you had a wealthy grandfather, and he passed away, and he was so wealthy, but he left a trust fund for you as his grandson. And the idea was, and this happens quite a bit, that a certain amount of money would be transferred to you every month for as long as you live. I know people that have such trust funds. And every month, they get the money. Now, it doesn't matter whether they work. There's no conditions on it. Whether they work, or they don't work, or they... But they'll get that money.
But it is said at the time of initiation, both Punya and Papa offer to the first sacrifice to the Lord. That's actually to gain a clean slate. Is that so? So in that case, this does not come.
So, therefore, better be careful about taking initiation because you may lose your inheritance. Krishna says, Ananyas chintiyantamam yedina paripasate tesham vityabhyuttam yoga kshema bahamya. Yes, he also said, Krishna said, Harishe tadhanam sharai, that I may take away everything from the devotee. So yes, that's his prerogative. Yes, when you take initiation, you have to accept that Krishna may, in taking away your karma, he may adjust things. You might have been a big enjoyer, and he may take away that opportunity. But devotee doesn't mind. Yes. Because he knows Krishna will take care of. Krishna knows what's best for me. And if Krishna wants to take away my wealth, just like Prabhupada said that happened to him. He said, I had all opportunities. I could have been as wealthy as Birla. Actually, in his horoscope, it said he would have been. And he did become. But not through material or business, but he became through bhakti. But actually, he said, I had the opportunity to become very, very wealthy. But I made a mistake. He said, I was a little young and a little impetuous, and they offered me some very high, I think it was Bengal Chemical, offered him to be their agent, and he would have gotten a fabulous salary, but still he said, I was a little proud. So I said, no, you have to give me this amount, otherwise I won't do it. He said, it was a great mistake. And then there was some intrigue, someone intrigued against him, started some litigation, and one thing after another, he lost his opportunity. But he said, just see, Krishna took it all away, but he gave me this opportunity to spread Krishna consciousness. And of course, ultimately he got all the wealth back again in the form of, he had 108 temples, fabulous temples worth millions and millions of dollars. Even more than that, he had disciples who were dedicated to work for him, and grand disciples and so many. So, but, so either whether you take it material or spiritual, let's say, if you take it from a material point of view, you have your karma anyway, which you cannot change. Material. No, I'm saying material. So if you take it from the material point of view, you have your karma, and that's set. So you will get as much of the trust fund as you're destined to get. It's already, it's all signed, it's waiting for you to come. Okay. So then you don't have to worry about your income. But even more, if you take it spiritually, you don't have to worry about your income. If you actually understand what you just said, that Krishna personally takes care of whatever you lack, and he preserves what you have, then you also have nothing to worry about for your maintenance. Nityo, nityanam, chaitanas, chaitanam, ekobhavanam, yobhididatikam. So either way, if you say spiritually, I'm afraid, well no, that means you, if spiritually means you understand that Krishna is the well-wishing father, he'll take care of all your needs. And materially, you also have your trust fund, your karmic trust fund. So you, either way, you have nothing to lose by studying at the Vedic College. You don't have to worry about your income.
I fully agree that everything is there in his books, and he said we need not go anywhere else. But he himself like said in some purport that we need to read like books like Priya Bhagavatamrit, Lalit Madhav. So to advance, so but he has not written Priya Bhagavatamrit.
Yes. So I would say, in reply to that, first become very well versed in Prabhupada's books. Read them all very, very carefully. And then, after you have your doctorate, your Bhakti Sarvabhauma, then you may embark on studying some of these other books, which have been rendered by his, you know, faithful disciples. Then I would say, yes, by all means. And they will support your understanding. But without that first becoming very well versed in Prabhupada's books, then there may be some misunderstanding or confusion. It's like the famous statement Prabhupada said when he was very ill and he was planning to go back to India for either recuperating or passing away. This was quite early in the movement, 1967. So they asked Prabhupada, can you send one of your godbrothers? Can you send one of your godbrothers here to continue running the movement? And Prabhupada said, thought for a moment and said, the problem is if they speak one thing different than what I'm speaking, you'll all become confused and everything will be lost. That's how crucial his understanding was. And it wasn't due to his arrogance that he said that, but it was just truthful. And we see that as soon as someone speaks something different, the devotees become bewildered and they give up their... Therefore we're so adamantly... Yes, we're so adamantly attached to his particular teachings. But like I said, after you've become well versed in those, then there's no harm in studying these other supportive. Yes, he told us before he left, he said, if I have time, I'll give you Mahabharata, I'll give you Ramayana, I'll give you all the works of the Goswamis. He told us that. So these things were on his list, but he just didn't get time to do them. Even he didn't get time to finish the Bhagavatam, but he finished it through his disciples. So we can also accept that his disciples who are sincere and qualified, they will be able to carry on and give render those other Sanskrit and Bengali works so that we can study. Is that right? That's my particular. You know, others may have other people, but that's what I learned from Srila Prabhupada. These are what I, because otherwise, what will you have to compare them to? You need to have the foundation so you know what is the standard of understanding. And he gave those books especially for the members of ISKCON to study them. And so you will be showing your great respect for him, and you will get his unlimited blessings. And besides that, really no one can speak as wonderfully and present everything as wonderful as Srila Prabhupada. We've seen that. And there's no harm. You'll enjoy Prabhupada's books. Every word is nectar. Any other?
What else students have to other than reading the Hindi?
Excuse me?
The students also get involved in some activities of the
They get what?
Some services, they have some services to do.
At our college, because we don't charge any tuition, and we're following the Vedic system of education, which is no tuition. There's no charge. The teacher accepts it, and he doesn't take a salary. But he does engage his students in some service. Achavan, Dasavan, Nicha. So the students at the place of the guru, which means the college, the school, they engage in some menial services. So we also do that. We expect our students to do some service to help run the college. It may be in the form of collecting alms, or distributing books, or through cleaning, or cooking, or computer services, whatever. Whatever they're able to perform, and this way they help run the college. And it works. We started our college with no funds, and by Krishna's grace we have a very nice facility, 5 buildings, and student body is increasing, the teachers, professors are increasing, respect is increasing, everything. And we're simply dependent on Krishna. That's the Brahminical system of education. Brahma doesn't take salary. Because as soon as he takes salary, just like you see in the mundane educational system, as we pointed out, the teachers are taking salary, aren't they? And what happens? They can't speak the truth. Even some of them know that what they're teaching is not the truth, but they can't change it because they're taking salary. Whereas if he's independent, he's not part of any institution, he can sit down and say the truth. And the real Brahmin will do that. A real Brahmin, so these are not real Brahmins. They may have some Brahminical inclination, these teachers, but because they're taking the salary, they become demoted to shudras. Anyone who takes a salary is a shudra. Before Varnas, only one takes a salary. The other three, no one pays. They just accept. For example, Brahmins accept charity. Dana Pratigraha. So Pratigraha means they can accept charity. They're the only ones who can accept charity. Kshatriyas don't accept charity. They accept taxes. Taxes is not charity. It's a different thing. It's a tax. And Vaishyas, they sell. A Kshatriya doesn't sell anything, he takes taxes. And a Vaishya, he sells, or he trades. But a Brahmin doesn't do that. A Brahmin teaches, and if someone gives some donation, fine, he accepts. So we're doing it that way, and it's working. So we think that that's... Now, we're not condemning other institutes who charge tuition, because Prabhupada also gave some indication that you can charge. He said sometimes that if you don't charge, people won't take it seriously. So, either way, as long as we're giving transcendental knowledge, but I particularly have found that this method is most beneficial for getting the students to imbibe the full the full idea of surrender. Because at our college, we can ask a student, will you kindly clean the floor? And he'll say yes. Whereas if he's paying some large tuition and you ask him to clean the floor, and he says, I'm not a cleaner. I didn't come here to clean. I'm paying my tuition. My father doesn't want me to clean. So because that Nietzsche or Dasaman, that's part of the process of learning to be a learned person, is that he has to have that humble attitude. Then he can get transcendental knowledge.
There's also a concept of guru dakshina. Once the student gets educated, he pays for the education that he received from the teacher.
So he gives some gifts, yes. Guru dakshina means at the end of his studies he gives some gifts. Yes. It's like Krishna and Balaram, after they studied with Sandipani Muni, they said, please, we want to give you some guru dakshina, just ask us for anything. So the teacher, he thought, well, these students are not ordinary students. I can ask them for something really that no one else can give. So he said, my son died, can you bring him back to life? And they said yes. And so they went, like Yamaraj and different places, and they found the son, they brought him back.
So it's part of the Brahmi culture?
Yes. It has to be Guru Dakshina.
So do the teachers ask what they need, or is it whatever it is? Yes, we can do.
Generally, Prabhupada's system that he established was that at the time of initiation, after getting initiated, then the student would go out and collect some alms, and he would bring that, whatever it was, to the guru. The initiation wasn't considered complete until the guru dakshina. Didn't matter how much, but he would at least offer something, whatever he could collect.
It's very nice to have devotees who have these titles, because it means that they have understanding of the scriptures. So do we have any kind of rule that each temple should have minimum or at least few devotees who are having these titles? I think there should be.
Well, of course, we just started this a few years ago. I mean, it's taken so long. For some reason, I don't know why, but it's taken so long for us to institute these. So now, at least we have Bhakti Shastra. We gave some Bhakti by Bhava exams at our college. So now, things are rolling. And eventually, yes, that will be the case. But right now, I think it's a little premature too.
Like temple, who will going to decide that the devotee should undertake these courses, or is it completely voluntary?
Well, I think it's already indicated that Prabhupada wanted everyone. Now, he didn't say you have to. If someone doesn't, is not so, shall we say, scripturally inclined, or that's okay. But Prabhupada said that then he won't be considered as learned. Won't be given the same consideration in terms of learning if he doesn't have. So, yes, those who want to be recognized, not for material purposes, but for preaching purposes. Just like, you know, if you hear from someone who's, it's like when a very advanced sannyasi speaks, we like to hear more, maybe. We're especially more inclined to hear because we have so much confidence. This person is very learned, backed by volumes of austerity and penance and vows or experience. I like to hear especially from this person. So that's the same with everyone. Everyone likes to hear from a qualified person. It enhances our faith. Maybe Prabhupada's, I know myself, I don't think it would have been so easy for me to have surrendered to just anyone. But here was Prabhupada. When I met him, he was 75 years old, pure devotee, fluent in Sanskrit, and all these things. He had sannyasi, he organized a movement. So it enhanced my respect, so that I was able to hear very easily from whatever he said. So these things can be helpful. We give the example that during the time of Lord Chaitanya, there was something very important. In order for people to listen to you, you had to be a sannyasi. And you had to be a sannyasi from the Mahayana school. That was considered the respectable sannyas. So Lord Chaitanya took sannyas particularly for that purpose, so that people would listen to him. Because before, he had his own school, but the students sometimes, they challenged him. What are you speaking? And he becomes so, but these students, I'm trying to teach him, and they don't listen, they don't respect me. So I'll take sannyas. So he did. And then he was able to see, after taking sannyas, then he converted Prakashananda Saraswati and his thousands of followers. He converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was the greatest scholar, because he was a sannyasi and they had to show respect. Sarvabhauma, when he saw Lord Chaitanya, he offered his obeisances and everything, so he became purified by that. And he was respectful. Now, in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, he gave a rabbinical threat to his students. He introduced first and second initiation. He gave a rabbinical threat even to those who were not born in Brahmin families, because he wanted to show that a Vaishnava is already a Brahmin. He wanted his devotees to be able to preach, and no one would respect them if they didn't have a Brahmin threat. So he gave a Brahmin threat, which upset the caste Brahmins a lot. They really were upset. You're giving Brahmin threat, sacred threat, to these people who were born in families that are not Brahmins? How could you do that? They were upset, but he didn't care. But now, in this day and age, Brahmin threat, if you're preaching in the West, nobody even knows what a Brahmin threat is. They don't care. But if you have some degree, some academic degree, they are more respectful. If you have the title doctor, they are more interested in hearing. So therefore, we have Prabhupada devised this idea of giving these degrees to his learned students.
You mentioned in Brahmins that they don't accept salaries. We see on this phone, we have something Brahmins who are working outside. So how do we?
Well, then we like to think that they're Vaishnavas. Huh? Vaishnava, he can do. Because the Vaishnava, what will he do with the salary? He'll give it all to Krishna. So therefore, it's like Prabhupada in the early days in New York. He had students coming. And you know the famous story, I think Satyavraj is a famous one. Satyavraj came back one day to the temple, the storefront, and he said, Prabhupada, I quit my job, now I'm ready to work full time, and Prabhupada said, no, you should go back, get your job, and give the money. Because they needed the money for running the temple. Now that didn't happen, that didn't go on for such a long time. At some point, Prabhupada did want him to quit, but at that particular time, the money was more important than doing, being in the temple. So that's the judgment of the spiritual master, if he feels that if your earning power is so valuable, it may be more valuable than your other services. So then it's the same, it's transcendental. Just like Ramananda Roy, he was situated as a governor. Now, but yet he was considered the topmost devotee in the world. Lord Chaitanya wanted to certify that Ramananda Roy was the top. And then after some time, Lord Chaitanya asked him to come to Jagannath Puri, give up his job. So that's the prerogative of the spiritual master. He may engage his disciple. Now certainly Ramananda Roy was a Brahmin, he was better than any Brahmin. But yet he was working for some time, but then at some point he gave that up or something. Either way. What is it? Kiva vipra kiva nyase shudra kene no. Jai Krishna tapodeta se guru hoy. He's a guru if he knows the science of Krishna. It doesn't matter what his occupation is. whether he's Brahma or Shudra even. Jayananda was driving a taxi and he was giving all the money to support the temple in San Francisco. Yet he was not just a Shudra, a driver, he was a Vaishnava. Okay? Alright, so the first semester we studied Bhagavad Gita, introductory course, topical study of Srimad Bhagavatam. Means the Bhagavatam class in the morning is designed as a course. So the students will attend the class and they'll take some assignment at the end of the week. They'll answer some questions on each class. Kind of the same, you know, questions that are, cover the main points. And they'll get credit for that. Why not? It's a class. Why should we not give credits? You think Bhagavatam is not an important class? No, the whole idea of this college is to utilize what we're already doing and just give credit for it. That's our point. Someone's studying, he's reading these books and teaching for 30 years and he has no degrees, no credits, no titles, nothing. So we're adjusting it so that they will be recognized. Then Sri Isha Upanishad class, Nectar Devotion. So they'll study these books and then they'll answer some questions. Nectar of Instruction, Vedic Paradigm. You've seen that book. We have a 60-part course. It's kind of an overview. We give this in our first semester. Readings in Vedic Literature and Gita Shlokas. And Vaishnava Etiquette. That Vaishnava Etiquette is our Ishtagosti. Every week we have an Ishtagosti at our college. And we discuss practical things like cleanliness principles and etiquette, how to deal. You know, because it's always a problem. Devotees don't know how to sometimes deal with other devotees or, you know. So those things come up. Our cleanliness principles. How do you deal with other senior devotees? How do you deal with junior devotees? How to deal with guests. So these things are covered in our Ishtagostis each week. Then that's the first semester, 15 credits. Then the next semester, they get 3 credits for learning the techniques and practices of chanting japa 16 rounds daily. So they get 3 credits for chanting 16 rounds a day in the second semester. It's a 2-hour class. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And we see whether they're chanting the mantra properly. Because otherwise, sometimes, you know, we chant very quickly and slur the words, or we don't say all the syllables. So it's very, the most important thing is chanting. Krishna says, of sacrifices I am japa, chanting the whole name. So don't you think that's an important class? Japa class, 2 hours to learn how to chant properly. So yeah, so one semester they get 3 credits for that. And no one can find fault. Our students, every day they're chanting 2 hours a day. So they get 3 credits. Then Bhagavad Gita, more intermediate. Now they took Bhagavad Gita the first semester, now they take another Bhagavad Gita course, which is more, a little more developed, to go into more details studying Bhagavad Gita. Actually, we do it in 2 parts. So the first part is in the second semester, and the second part, second 9 chapters, is in the third semester. Easy Journey to Untied Life, Function of Life, Tapas Yoga System, and another. Then third semester, again, they get credit for the Bhagavatam. Topical studies in Srimad Bhagavatam. So for a few semesters they get credit for it. Not all the way through the college, but for the first few semesters they do. Then second part of the Gita, Nectar Devotion second part, studying the 12 rasas, introduction to Vaishnava prayer. So they get credit for attending aartis and learning all the songs of aarti. Mangal aarti and another aarti. Guru Puja, Tulsi aarti, Mangal aarti. Then some other books. Then fourth semester, Archana Padati, they study the process of deity worship, you know, we have that book. Then elementary Sanskrit begins. They take their first Sanskrit course in the fourth or fifth semester. Then, in the fifth semester, they begin Bhagavatam, first canto, first volume, and they study all the way through to the whole first canto. And then there's a practicum. We encourage the students to go to India to this Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. They get six credits for coming because it's a 6 week or 7 week practicum. And then they write an essay of their experience in Mayapur, their experience in Vrindavan, and their experience with the devotees. So in that way they get 6 credits. You can see that this will be very attractive for many students. In fact, even other college professors have told me that they would like to send their students with us for our India practicum. The potential for recruiting through Veda College is tremendous. Devotee was pointing out the other day that what are the purposes of this coin? So these are the 7 purposes of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. A, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. So it sounds like that purpose is fulfilled by the Veda College. Systematically educate. That's what it means. So that's what we're doing. The next semester, they study the second canto, and they begin the third canto, and they take another Sanskrit course. Then the seventh semester, Bhagavatam third canto, fourth canto, finishing third canto, then like that. So this way, they take their semester is studying Srimad Bhagavatam. And then next one, and they go through to the 6 cantos, and they go through from 7th canto all the way up to 12th canto, and then they study Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's it.
What's the total duration of the program?
We mentioned before, but I'll mention again. For the associate's degree or the Bhakti Shastri is a 2-year. If someone has no previous experience, and then another 2 years for the bachelor's degree or Bhakti by Baba.
You have the stress 6 cantos.
Yeah, so we cover the 6 cantos and the 2 years. Of course, it can be done a little quicker because the semester is 4 months. So two times 4 months is 2 semesters. Now, if someone wants to take 3 semesters, he can do that in a year. So it can go a little quicker. It can be like a year and a half.
What kind of crowd we get? It's mainly the wards of children of devotees, or it's open for?
Well, we're getting about half and half now. Half children of devotees and half just people that are interested from outside, from mainstream, young people.
And why the outside is doing it? Just to know the Vedic thing, or they really?
Well, yeah, they're interested in Krishna consciousness, and they've heard that this is the best, the best program for education and learning. Some, of course, 4 different types of people come to devotional service. Chaturvidha, Janas, Sukriti, Arto, Jigyasu, Artanti, Gyanita, Artashu. We had one student come. He was studying at the university. He was a graduate student, but he had a summer open, so he thought he would come for one semester. He was a Buddhist, but he just thought, out of inquisitiveness, So he came and he followed everything. He chatted 16 rounds a day. And by the time he left, he was a Vaishnava. He'd gone from Buddhism to Vaishnavism. He left. He still went back to complete his studies at his university. But he considered himself a Vaishnava. He was chanting Hare Krishna. So they come for different reasons. Some may come just to try for one semester. There's no commitment. Anyone can come whenever they like, or they can leave whenever they like. Some may be thinking, there's one man, he's writing to me, he said, I'm just finishing up my material affairs, and then I'm going to come for 8 years and get my doctorate. And then I'm going to take something else, he said. So that's how he's thinking, and people are thinking different ways, how they'll utilize. Someone may be thinking, I'll get some degree, then I'll teach in Vedic University, or I'll teach in some secular universities. Or they can open their own school, can open their own classes. It's not very difficult. Just put an ad in, put up some advertisement, classes on Bhakti Yoga, right? You can teach anywhere. You'll get people to come. Right? It's not difficult. You can teach this science anywhere in the world. You can say, such and such, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta, bachelor's, master's, you can use these titles to augment, to give a little more, give yourself confidence. Also, we see that these degrees are to give the devotees confidence. Because a lot of times we see devotees lack confidence. They don't realize how much knowledge they have. Sometimes I speak with devotees and they say, I don't know anything. What do you mean you don't know anything? 30 years you've been studying. You don't realize how much you know. You know more than anyone. You know more than all the scientists, all the professors, all of them put together. Is it really me? Yes, you. You can speak knowledge. You can speak things. Yeah, Prabhupada said that Bhaktisiddhanta was such a great spiritual master that even his beginning students could defeat any other scholars. And that's a fact. Our devotees, they don't realize how much knowledge they have sometimes. They can defeat anyone. On any subject. If they've studied the books carefully. If you read Prabhupada's books, you'll be able to defeat anyone on anything. Any subject. So, but they're sometimes they're a little shy, and they go, I don't know. But if they have, your Bhakti Shastri, your Bhakti Nibbana, your bachelor's, your master's, master's, all right. So I guess I can speak. So it's also to give them confidence. And another thing is, if you want parents to agree, they're much more inclined to give their permission for their children to go to a Vedic college than they are to join a cult, a religious cult, which is different than their religion. Especially in the West, nobody's born in Vaishnavism, so now their son wants to join a different religion, what they would consider a new religious cult. It's a horrible blemish on the family. And they're very upset. But when their son wants to enroll in a Vedic college, that's alright. It's just the same thing, but it's old wine and new bottles. You take the same old wine, you put it in new bottles and new labels, and people take it. So we're not teaching anything new. The same old eternal Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, but it's packaged in a way that's more acceptable. Parents can accept it much easier. And students also, because there's another factor, there's a psychology. Let's say someone's interested in Krishna consciousness. He's attracted, but he's afraid to become a devotee. So he thinks, I'll go to the college and I'll just study some course. I won't become a devotee. I'll just study. So he can adjust it in his mind that I haven't, given up everything. I haven't surrendered. I'm not a devotee. I'm just studying courses. And it makes it easier for him also. So it has many benefits. It's less commitment. I'm not, it's not that I've surrendered my life. No, I'm studying this year at Rupa Nimbadevi College. Going to take some courses. Okay, it's a whole different thing. And he can tell his friends that. He doesn't have to tell them his, you know. You understand? So it has many advantages. Yes, we like to make 18 just because there's so many laws against minors, you know. If you have minors and anything, if there's any problems, and, you know, it's legal. Plus the maturity level, you know, because it's a living in a communal situation or dormitories in a kind of a college environment, a certain level of maturity is required too. You know, children, if they're younger, then they're a little sometimes frivolous. And I've experienced taking care of younger ones. Generally, they're a little frivolous. You know. So, but once they reach, even 18-year-olds are sometimes frivolous. 20 is the best age, really. But I would take them at 18 now, because we see with the college kind of format, it's a little easier for them to understand. And as we were mentioning before, that yes, right now we're running men's college, but there's nothing to stop lady devotees from starting, you know, colleges for ladies. And Prabhupada even said, you know, that we could have similar convents like the, you know, the Catholics do for training ladies and men, you know, separately, and so they can become saints like Mother Teresa, even better than Mother Teresa, because they'll have much more knowledge.
Do you think that the notion of maybe the same kind of syllabus, or
would
there be more emphasis on
things
like
celibacy? Ah, I see. Well, that's a good point. That's a consideration. It's true, Prabhupada did say that. If we want to go back, if we want to kind of reestablish the Vedic system, then those types of things could be included. However, I would say that just as I think they could be, I have experience with the Bhaktin program because I started that too, and but basically we just taught them the same things. And it worked fine. Generally, ladies are going to get married at a certain point, and the main thing is they have to be devotees. They have to be fixed in the philosophy, because if they're not, then the marriage won't work out very well anyway. So, learning to cook is part of our training we give for the men also, and the ladies, so they can both learn that. And that's something that can be done. Okay, so we've reached the time now. Thank you very much. This ends our seminar. Thank you very much. All goes to Shri Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Ram Vishnu Bhadaya Krishna Bhadaya Bhadaya Shri Mani Bhadaya Vananda Shri Vaitana 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 Vanan